An extract from Chapter 22, Mass Funeral, Kosovo, 1999. "We're having a day off today," John announced as we arrived for work. Smiles appeared on everyone's faces. "We've been invited to a funeral." Smiles disappeared. "It's apparently going to be a big deal, and we're specially invited guests, so I'd appreciate it if we all attended. There's no time to change into our best bib and tuck for a funeral, not that we have any, so we go as we are." After driving for half an hour, we arrived back in the village of Krishimadi in blazing sunshine, near where we exhumed the bodies only a few days before. As we neared the end of the main street, I noticed there was a field where up to 1,000 Kosovars had gathered. They stood aside to make way as our group approached, and a small group of smartly dressed men in dark suits guided us towards dozens of coffins on trestles perfectly lined up in a row. Behind each coffin stood people who I assumed were grieving relatives or friends of the deceased. We were each handed a printed proclamation containing the names and dates of birth of 79 individuals who were to be buried. I recognised some of the names in the notice as those we had been working on and had presumptive identification. I paid particular notice to numbers 1 to 23, which all had the same surname. It appeared they were all from the same family, the Hotti family. I gulped when I read 23 people from the same family. I noticed there were also two doctors and a professor named among the list. As we were escorted past each coffin, it was as if we triggered an outpouring of grief that gradually grew louder and louder. Each coffin had a photo on top of which I presume was that of the deceased, and then, near the end of the line, there were 12 smaller coffins draped in red velvet cloth, the colour of the ethnic Albanian flag. Each of the coffins had a heartbreaking photo on top. Inside these coffins were the children. We were then invited by men using hand gestures to stand on top of a raised hillock in the centre of the field in front of the row of coffins. A few speeches were made, I assume, by men who were prominent in the community. I didn't understand any of what was said, except when I occasionally heard a word sounding like forensic mentioned. When this happened, people applauded and nodded in appreciation towards us. After the speeches, the coffins were carried past us by men to the newly dug graves just behind us, all 79 of them. They were followed closely by the ashen-faced women, sobbing and wailing, carrying the photographs from happier times of their loved ones. It was especially moving watching the red velvet coffins as they were carried easily by weeping men. My eyes filled with tears and I pinched the skin on the back of my hand in an attempt to remain composed. As we were ushered closer to the newly dug graves, a very small, frail old lady collapsed in the sun-baked earth at our feet. She looked up at me with tear-filled eyes while patting her chest. I recognised this gesture both from the grave we had exhumed earlier and from Bosnia. In the Balkans, this gesture means you will live on in our hearts. So I returned the gesture by patting my chest in sympathy. A man in his 50s, who I presumed was her relative, carefully but easily picked up her thin frame as he looked at me straight in the eye, and then he bowed his head and he too patted his chest. I recognised him as one of the men who had taken the photos at the grave. I could only manage a half-baked smile back at him as I bowed back, feeling very moved by the stranger's gesture of what I assumed was gratitude. By now I was biting on the inside of my lip to prevent me from showing him that inside my head I was crying. After the victims were buried, a pile of the colourful convex floral chip tributes were built high at the roadside. I was puzzled that the tributes were made from plastic flowers and foliage, secured with clear plastic sheet coverings. Then I realised that they would last much longer as a memorial than if the flowers had been real. I also noticed there was no sign of any real flowers at the funeral. My mind drifted back to the beautiful sunflower fields of Kosovo. "A beer is in order, I think, folks," John announced somberly as we left for home. Back at our house, while the team queued up to use the sat phone to call home, I wandered out to the riverside cafe I had been used to gravitating to for a beer when I could after each day's work. The sunsets over the river Bistrica in Prizren were spectacular from my vantage point at a table outside the tiny bar. Whilst enjoying the evening sunshine, and more especially an ice-cold beer, I heard a commotion coming from further along the narrow river roadside, so I decided to have a look. As I approached a row of houses, I could see smoke and long tongues of flames billowing from one house located by the river. I watched German KFOR soldiers trying to disperse a small crowd of rubbernecking locals. I noticed an old man with a craggy, sunburnt face wearing a traditional white Albanian hat that reminded me of an egg, sitting on the stone riverside wall opposite the burning house. I asked him if I could join him. He nodded, and when I sat down, I noticed he was also wearing a heavy woolen winter coat, even although it was still hot in the evening sun, in addition to the heat from the house fire. On one arm there was a safety pin attached to the upper part of his empty sleeve. I realised his arm was missing, and it looked as if he couldn't be bothered folding and pinning the sleeve up. When he caught me looking, he just said, "Minas." "Mines." I nodded in understanding, and then he motioned towards the burning house and quietly said, "Serbo." "Serbs." There was no attempt by anyone to put out the fire. It was just left to burn. People walked past with hardly a second glance at the burning building. I wondered if there was anyone inside. I eventually stood up and motioned to the old chap, asking if I could take a photo of him. He laughed and nodded in bemusement as I clicked a few shots of him, hoping that one day, perhaps years later, I'd paint a portrait of this character-filled face and be reminded of the surreal event going on behind us. The next morning, I discovered two charred bodies had been added to the reefer. John had been woken during the night and asked for the keys of the padlock. He was told by KFOR soldiers they were Serb civilians who'd been found dead after a house fire. They were delivered to our mortuary under the cover of darkness by the German soldiers, who didn't want to draw attention to the fact that the victims were Serbian. They had been delivered to us only out of respect for the dead. End. Grave Faces, published by Bihar Publications.